In preparation for its 100th anniversary celebration in the years 1987 and 1988, Morehead State University is conducting a series of oral interviews with former students, faculty members, and administrators. I am Audrey Jones, present director of the External Studies Program at Morehead State, and today's date is Wednesday, December 8, 1982. I am interviewing Byron Murray, a native of the state of Missouri, who came to the college as an English and journalism instructor in 1926, became department chair in 1939, director of the upper division in 1948, and director of graduate studies in 1957. Byron's years of service to the college spanned the years from 1926 to 1967, a total of 41 years. He has also served the college through a number of temporary assignments since that time, the most recent as a part-time archivist. Dr. Murray's BA degree is from Maryville Teachers College in Missouri, his MA from the University of Missouri, and his PhD in English from the University of Iowa. Byron, you were born in Oregon, Missouri on September 19, 1900, and until 1926 had spent most of your life in that state. How did you happen to come so far north in 1926?
Well, at that time, there were not too many openings in college teaching, and I was had prepared and thought about college teaching. I had done some high school teaching, coaching, and also 1 year at Christian College, junior college,
yes,
at Columbia.
Were you appalled by the weather when you got here?
Oh, we did have an interesting experience the first few times that it came along. Of course, Northwest Missouri, where I grew up, has its cold weather too at times, but not as steady and not as severe. And we don't know what a blizzard is there.
Well, you soon discovered up here.
Soon discovered.
Were you married at the time that you arrived
here?
Yes. Who was your wife?
Nona Pence was her maiden name.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
Well, she was a former student of mine. She taught a year before we were married. She taught in Northwest Missouri while I had a position over in Illinois, Keithsburg, Illinois. Interesting little background and so on.
I think that your children also are very much attached to Morehead State. Do you want to give us a little bit of a background about them and their relationship to Morehead State?
Well, that's quite a long story in itself.
Well.
But I think I might just say that we lived here. We liked Morehead. We liked our surroundings and the faculty and the town and the community very much, but we weren't certain for a long time that we wanted to settle here and live here all the time. And our deciding experience, the deciding event, two long summers we spent at Penn State and took off from Morehead State and went there and drove, took all of our supplies for the summer. And the first summer when we came back, after 3,000 miles of driving over the kind of country that we had grown up in, gently rolling to hills and mountains of Pennsylvania and so on, we finally came back at the end of the summer to Rossi and started down the hills and saw the Red River Valley in the distance. We were surprised because the children riding in the back seat gave out a sudden shout, "Hooray for the Red River Valley!" And we realized that from that time on that this was home to them. And that it was one of the steps in the process of accommodating ourselves for the final idea of living here and building our ideal home.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you should have mentioned that, because my next question was, what kept you here all these years?
That, and of course, the very appreciated by us climate of the faculty and of the town.
Yes. Since this interview is to cover mainly the years 1925 to 1950, you're one of the few people who were here in those early years, and I'd like to talk a little bit about your first year on the campus. Now, what I did do was check a little bit in the Mystic for September 10th, 1926, and I noticed there was opening dinner. We still have an opening dinner here. Could you tell us a little bit about the opening dinner? Do you remember? This is your first year on the campus now.
Well, I remember particularly, of course, because there were three of us who were new. Two of us married, Dr. Arnold Christensen and myself, and Dr. Negli Teeters, who was in sociology. And I don't know what happened to him on the opening night of the faculty dinner, but I know that Dr. Christensen and myself were asked to talk, to respond to recognition of the fact that we are new faculty members, and we went away from that experience feeling that it was a very friendly place, especially cosmopolitan, so to speak, among the faculty members, coming, as they did, of course, from all over the United States, and with all kinds of backgrounds.
The president at that time was McLean. did he speak at the banquet, or?
Well, I'm sure he did. Mm-hmm. I don't recall.
You don't
exactly
recall that. Where was the banquet held? What building?
Oh, goodness, must have been in Dahl Hall.
Dahl Hall or Comstock Hall or one of those halls. What type of dress were you expected to wear?
Well, just ordinary dress, but it is characteristic that in certain occasions, both there and in the community and so on, there were occasions in those days when we dressed up, really dressed up, you know,
the women
in tuxes and the women in formal dress.
Women in formal dress. Would they have done that for the opening faculty dinner?
No.
Not for that. Did you have a host or hostess that came to your home and picked you up for that dinner? Or
no, I don't recall that.
No, you don't recall that.
No. Mm-hmm.
Were there any special decorations or anything of that type?
Don't recall that either, but I do know that Miss Dahl, for whom Dahl Hall is named, was much given to flair and style in terms of banquets, and particularly Christmas banquets and that sort of thing. Generally, there were a few of the faculty, perhaps a couple of couples, invited specially for the Christmas party for the students and those who lived in the dormitory. And they made quite a little of it and decorated the hall and served in style. Of course, family style, round tables, linen and all.
You had linen and cloth napkins, I imagine, and dressed specially for it. I noticed that an opening chapel was mentioned, which the president spoke and a Mrs. Woolworth spoke.
Yes, Mrs. Woolworth was a missionary sponsored by the First Congregational Church in Moorhead. I believe she was not a member of that church, but we took on ourselves to sponsor her as a missionary, and on that occasion she was back in Moorhead for a visit.
It's interesting that you say she was sponsored by the First Congregational Church. I think the school had quite some ties with the Congregational Church at that time.
Very decidedly, and not only then, but from the very beginning, because Dr. Lord, our first president, was a member of the church and his wife, and very active member. And then he was followed, of course, by Dr. Weld, who likewise. In fact, the presidents, six presidents in a row, from the beginning of the Moorhead State down to 1958. Every president was a member of that church.
Well, that's an interesting bit of information. How about the relationship between the Lutherans at Concordia and the Congregationalists then at Moorhead State?
Well,
they get along pretty well? Interchange?
We didn't. We got along very well, I would say. I remember that winter, Dr. O.J. Hagen, for whom Hagen Hall is named, we ran across him on one time, on occasion over in Fargo, and were invited shortly to dinner at their house, a grand old house on 8th Street, opposite the church nearly. He, of course, Dr. Hagen was the, I should say Mrs. Hagen, was the daughter of Dr. Weld and, yes, and family. And at that, on that occasion, there was a faculty member and his wife from Concordia, and Dr. Burgess, Dr. T.O. Burgess, and my wife and myself, and Mr. Lazier, who was an industrial arts person in Morehead State, and somebody else I can't recall. But this occasion was a very wonderful event. Gracious hostesses and hosts, as Dr. and Mrs. Hagen were. And so all in all, we remembered that very pleasurably.
Yes, I had Dr. Burgess as an instructor when attended Concordia. Were there quite a number of social occasions that Concordia faculty and Morehead State faculty would that, be a
that
part
That didn't
of?
Happen definitely as a whole faculty and meeting with the other until Dr. Snar came along and suggested it, and we invited the Concordia faculty over about 1950, in the early 50s. And then Concordia responded the following year and had us as hosts.
I see. Guests. It was a sort of reception where you mixed together.
Well, and a dinner.
And a dinner.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
How about programs? Was it common for Morehead State students and faculty to go to Concordia for musical events, or Concordia to come over here for things of that sort?
Well, I can't remember very much of that. I just remember that I was asked to speak at the Concordia Chapel way back in the 30s, and since that time, off and on, I've been there on a number of occasions for lectures and so on.
Yes, yeah, so that there was an interchange. Was there some rivalry for students? And
Of course, we're overlooking the fact that the rivalry was very decided in terms of athletics and so on. And of course, there were some other interesting, fascinating little things that happened. One thing I recall very vividly, I was advisor of publications, the college paper. And in the paper, we had told about a party, a dance, held at Morehead State. And we had occasion to mention that the orchestra was made up of, I don't know how we said it in the story, but it included a couple of Concordia students in the orchestra. And a student, happened to be one of my students, was a daughter of a Lutheran minister in Fargo. And she took the mystic home with her. And shortly, the minister of the, I believe it was First Congregation, I mean First Lutheran Church in Fargo, called President Brown of Concordia and wanted to know what was going on here. Concordia student playing in the dance orchestra.
Oh, yes.
And so Dr. McLean called me into the office and said, showed me the paper, and had a twinkle in his eye as usual because he was a man with a great deal of sense of humor. Although he looked very sober and sedate most of the time, he had a very lively sense of humor. And he showed me the story, told me about the call, that Dr. Brown had gotten in touch with him. So President McLean said, what are we going to do about it? And I said, well, we'd looked into in the meantime, we'd heard the rumor, too, that certain people didn't like that very much. So we dug around a little bit further and discovered that the students that we mentioned who were not then enrolled in Concordia, they had been enrolled in the fall semester, but had dropped out. So we ran a story, a corrected story, saying that the orchestra was made up of the so-and-so and included two students who had been students at Concordia, had been.
So they were safe from discipline then.
I remember taking the story that the students wrote up with a mystic to President McLean, and he looked at me and smiled and said, "Oh, that's all right." So we had our fun.
Yes.
But there have been years since I've told that story to Concordia faculty members, many of whom I've known over the years and still know. And we've had a good laugh about it.
Surely.
With Concordia faculty members.
Right.
Because things have changed there, too.
Right. You've talked about chapel several times, and chapel that you'd spoken at Concordia. It was required here for many years.
Yes.
How many days a week did
Just
you have
once.
It?
Once a week.
That even right from the beginning in 1926, when you first came, it was
that
once
was
a week.
That was true for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Faculty used to march in processional up to the stage, sit on the stage.
Yes. So did the students have assigned seats, and was roll taken?
Roll was taken, mm-hmm. and it was not compulsory, however.
Oh, it wasn't compulsory?
No, it wasn't compulsory, but just urged upon them.
Yes, I know at Concordia it was compulsory, and I just didn't know whether it was at Morehead State or not.
No.
What kind of programs did you usually have once a week? Was it mostly faculty speakers or outside?
Mostly outside.
Were the themes religious or political?
Oh, all kinds of things. It's more like a service club type of program, I think, that we had. Mm-hmm. Speakers who represented all kinds of interests and so on.
What was the relationship of the college with the community at this time? Was the faculty involved in community service? Was the community basically supportive of Morehead State?
Oh, I think it was, we could say that it was supportive of both Morehead State and Concordia. I think we ought to mention that we had very fine relations. Of course, on the athletic field, the students didn't have the kind of inner college feeling that we have now. We have a feeling of supporting each other quite much in these days. Whereas in those days, they used to have a good deal of fun back and forth. Homecomings, we'd build up a great bonfire, preparation for a bonfire, materials. And, of course, it was the game of Concordia or students or of Morehead State students to try to slip over and light the other college's bonfire beforehand. And of course, they had good-natured fights back and forth, you know, such as that.
Mm-hmm. They used to paint each other's buildings
sometimes,
I think.
Yes.
Right. Did you feel that Morehead city government was pretty good at that time? Was it a good place for students to be? Was Morehead a good place for students to be?
Oh, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was.
It was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you felt that city government was fairly well run.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that in the student newspaper, there were quite a number of Lyceum programs listed. You had things like the Herman String Quartet, the New York Little Symphony. How important were these programs on the campus? Did the students attend them well?
Oh, I'm sure they did.
Mm-hmm.
Students, faculty, townspeople.
Townspeople came to those programs, mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. That was a long way to bring some of them all the way from New York City. The same student member, the same newspaper mentioned some student organizations. For example, you had a very active YMCA and YWCA chapters on the campus. Did you have any contact with those chapters?
I didn't work with those particular organizations very much, but of course we had many other organizations, mm-hmm. which grew, of course, in extent by the 1930s. So that we had representative departmental societies.
Yes.
And
art clubs and English clubs.
And geography mm-hmm. council and so on. And Sigma Tau Delta, which is a national English fraternity. And, of course, what was the name of the one, the education fraternity? It was also a national
mm-hmm.
and so on.
How about the Owls? Did you have anything to do with the Owls?
No. we were invited to the first year. There were just one fraternity and two sororities, and it just so happened that we were invited by all three of them for their parties during the year. It was in 1932 or 32, I guess, that the second fraternity, Alpha Epsilon, was formed, and I was a charter member of that and a faculty member.
You wrote lyrics for a song for them.
Yes. That was, by the way, characteristic of that whole period after the fire. The Great Fire did tremendous things to students, the faculty, and the general spirit, morale of the campus. Quite a little of the spirit of the pioneer was characteristic of that time, because it just pulled us all together. We didn't know for a time, of course, what was going to happen, whether they were going to rebuild the college in Moorhead, or locate it somewhere else, or drop it completely. And so when but the students, of course, put a tremendous spirit and enthusiasm into the rebuilding process. And by that time, of course, you had the transition from the late jazz age of the 20s, with all their, characteristically short-skirted women that Bernard DeVoto talked about in his book's commentary on his experiences at Northwestern University, and being bothered by the girls who came in and sat down in the front row and wanted to cross their knees in front of him, and so on. And, of course, that transition moved over when the Great Depression came, to an era when mores and manners became more sedate and more stylish and more noteworthy. And so you saw students come during that time, a gradual building up. Of course, we attracted in those days students of a very, a broader scope, a broader cross-section of life.
Yes.
We were attracting by that time the juniors and seniors who were going on for degrees. That
yes.
was building up rapidly. And the type of student we brought here, partly because of the Depression, no doubt, just from a cross-section of homes, including those who had quite a sense of social and of ambition for their students, their children. We had the students who came on as high a scholastic level as from any of the as went to any of the private colleges or the University of Minnesota.
Yes.
During the 30s.
So the fire was in 1930, as I recall. So you see a real change in the student body between,
yes.
and you think the fire was a part of it because it made them suddenly pull together. In ways that were unusual.
Nice.
Now, when you talk about the pre-1930 student now, and you talked about the short skirts, I noticed some of the pictures, the Marcel de hair, hair, things of that type. Was student discipline a problem in those days?
Not especially, of course.
Were the students, but the students were not quite as dedicated to their studies as they were in the 1930s.
A more savoir faire, knowing what to do socially and otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
You take a picture of some of the old yearbooks, you can see it rather plainly in the yearbooks.
Yes, yes.
That the look through the pictures of the students during the 30s and back in the 20s. Not a great deal of difference, except that the 30s were paid much more attention to style and to decorum.
Yes. Did you notice quite a difference in how you had to teach your classes then, let's say your English classes, the students in the 20s and the students in the 30s? Was there a difference in the kind of literature they were interested in the kind of writing they did?
I think not a great deal. I don't think that our students, as a matter of fact, represented, when I mentioned this jazz age, you didn't see much evidence of that because it didn't touch the lives of great number. You saw some.
They were still coming basically from the small towns and the stricter background.
That's right.
Yes. I thought it was interesting you talked about the more cosmopolitan student. Part of that, of course, is that in the 20s you had very few juniors and seniors. Right. You were basically graduating two-year teachers' college.
Right.
Graduates, I presume, at that time.
That's right.
And then there's a gradual changeover. Now, in that paper of 1926, it mentions some new classes, calculus, beginning chemistry. Is there a change in the curriculum at that time?
Well, definitely. When President McLean first came, he succeeded in 1923. He succeeded Dr. Dickerson, who was an ex-Army major and who brought some military precision, I suppose, to the campus and didn't take too kindly to the regime. When he left here, he went from here to Colorado as a professor of history, a very successful historian. But President McLean had that problem to smooth over. And when you think about President McLean, he came, of course, with a bachelor's degree from Hamline and a master's degree from the University of Minnesota, also from a background of experience in school teaching and superintendency and also a member of the State Department of Education. And you would think when he came in that he would be quite interested in just the more or less narrow field of teaching, education. But on the contrary, he was very much concerned about building the academic side of the institution. And it was notable that he really reinstituted the spirit that was true back in Dr. Lord's day and Dr. Wells' day, when they emphasized, although it was a normal school then, and now is still a teacher's college, he emphasized the building up of the departments. When I came to Moorhead, for instance, we had a department, English department of English and speech and literature, journalism, and so on, of five members, which was and similarly social studies was together as a division and incorporated people from sociology, history, economics, and so on. In other words, the whole drive of President McLean's career was to strengthen us as a really, in preparation, as one might say,